Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. My name's Rob. I'm joined by Tim. How's it going, mate?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I sounded Australian then.
For some reason, a little bit. You did sound a little bit Australian, yeah.
No, but genuinely, how's it going, mate?
It's going fine. Yeah, no, it's fine. Average week for me, but how about you?
Not too bad. Very busy. Got a few bikes in. Literally just looking at the new Harley Nightster Special sat in the studio. That's the sort of like spec'd up, more techie version. And we've got the 790 Duke at the moment. So I was just filming with that yesterday. It's going back today, picking up an 890 Adventure, one of my favorite adventure bikes ever made. New 2023 version. So very excited to pick that up. And tomorrow I've got to do a review of the Street Fighter V4S, which I'm a little bit apprehensive about. Not because I'm scared of the bike. Okay. It's great. But it's hard to know what to say about it when you ride it on the road, but I'm sure it gets some.
Yeah,
there.
I get that. Had that a little bit with the MV day that we did, where you're like, what can I actually say about this? You know it's good, but I'm getting like 10% of what it can do.
Yeah. We're going to go and do, actually, in a couple of weeks' time, myself and Tim, we're going to a Ducati media day where they line up their 2023 bikes outside the Ducati offices, and you just get to pick and choose which ones you ride, which is just such a glorious opportunity. Yeah. But again, I think we'll have to pick and choose stuff that not necessarily would make the best day out for us, just hooning around on Panigales, but the stuff we actually think there's something sort of worthwhile making a video about, which might be like, not the Panigales, I'm afraid to say, Tim.
Oh, you always promised Panigales. No, I'm with you on that. To be honest, I would have a better time on a smaller, more appropriate bike for whatever road we're on, you know?
Yeah, I think the key is get the serious work done. And then as the last slot of the day, because they've got like these hour-long slots, just book something bonkers and go and enjoy yourself without making a video.
I'll get thinking about it, yeah.
Yeah, we'll say, oh yeah, we'll cover it later on the podcast, you know?
And we will. It'll definitely come up in conversation.
Exactly. Anyway, myself and Tim have been extremely busy lately, haven't we, with launches and, like I say, press bikes and things like that. So over on the main channel, where we normally do a little bit of motorcycle news and what's coming out and what the specs are and how it compares, you know, haven't been doing quite as much of that stuff, and some interesting / cool looking / slightly unusual looking bikes have sort of slipped through the net. So I've been keeping a little list of things I want to talk about with you, Tim. So maybe today we'll run through some of the more unusual bikes to be announced this year. And at the end, I'd love to know from you, Tim, seeing as you're going into this a little bit blind, in fact, completely blind.
Completely blind.
Which one you'd actually like to ride of the four bikes I've sort of picked out.
Cool. Looking forward to it. Let's crack on.
Number one, Tim, the Buell Super Cruiser. And I'm going to say that anyone listening to this on audio, this might be a good episode for which to go over to the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast YouTube channel, because we'll lay some pictures over the video of these bikes. So definitely check that out if you've not subscribed already. But this looks absolutely bonkers. Have you got it on your screen Tim?
Yeah, I have got it on my screen.
Have you seen this already or not?
No, this is fresh to me. I did hear, actually, I haven't really kept track of Buell, but someone did mention the other day that they were releasing new bikes. Is this just one of a few that they're releasing?
This is more of a concept prototype, but they are taking orders. And that bloke in the picture I've sent to you is Roland Sands. Yes. Indeed.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, in the photo, you sort of think, yeah, I guess. Has he had a hand in designing this, do you know?
This is a collaboration between Buell and Roland Sands to make a power cruiser, I guess you could call it.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool.
Do you want me to tell you a bit about it?
Yeah, please do. Go ahead.
So I think the concept is to make something that actually will go quickly and handle well, but retain that sort of chilled out, laid back cruiser vibe. And I think there's been attempts by like Harley to make more performance orientated bikes, but they're still very much limited by the constraints of, you know, that brand and their style of bikes and perhaps what development is available to them. They sort of tend to put better forks or a bit more power or better brakes, twin discs on existing bikes. But this is a ground up, like wholehearted attempt to take the cruiser riding position and some of the style and just turn it into something quite mad. And actually, the specs sort of compete. In fact, they look really impressive next to even things like, I'd say, the Ducati Diavel V4.
I was going to say that's probably the closest, you know, rival, I suppose, in terms of a performance cruiser, if you want to have that as a, you know, a bracket.
It's got to be the benchmark. I mean, we talk about the, you got the big Harley breakout or whatever, you know, big muscle Harleys like that, but they're very torque focused and also still quite heavy. We've got the Rocket 3. We always say we love that bike, but that's massive as well. So
yeah,
really, in terms of like lightweight cruisers, there's only the Diavel. And this, well, take a stab at the peak power figures. It's a big Buell B-twin. I don't always derive from, but...
Okay. Do they list the actual horsepower? Because I know sometimes on Harley, they just mention the torque and they just leave it there.
I think that's a little bit of like horsepower shame. They didn't list it because it ain't so good. But this one is quite good. So they're more, I would call Buell horsepower brazen.
Impressive figures for me in horsepower, which is ridiculous. But I would say anything north of 160 brake, and I don't know what the Rocket is off the top of my head. I need some other sort of
Rocket's like 162, biases a little bit more towards torque.
The torque, yeah.
It's 221 newton meters of peak torque, which is
I'm gonna ask most. 160 horsepower of this thing. What's it got?
175.
Nice. Good, then I'm satisfied.
That is not a bike that looks like, you know, visually, that's not a 175 horsepower looking bike, is it?
No,
that looks like
all.
It's going to be a sluggish cruiser type
What's
thing.
What is the power plant on that one then? Did you say that's Buell derived? Is it their own?
Someone can probably tell us in the comments of the video more about this, but it's a liquid cooled V-twin, as you can see. I think it's 72 degrees, the sort of interval between those cylinders. And it just calls it the Buell Summin engine.
Okay.
But I know they used to use Harleys, right? But this is called the, let me tell you exactly what it's called. Mm-hmm. It is called the Buell ET, phone home, the Buell ET V2 V-twin.
Does it come with a little basket on the front so you can put your little partner in there?
It's, No, it's actually, it's just got a little ET inside spinning the crank round.
Okay.
No, I'm reading this off a motorcycle website that sort of does news and stuff, and they've said it's the Buell ET V2 V-twin, which the V-twin seems unnecessary considering V2's in the name. But yeah, ET V2, the ET phone home. Yeah, it's liquid cooled, it revs up. That's probably where most of the sort of big cruisers don't really compete. It's like they're all focused on that sort of 3000 RPM peak torque. And then obviously, we'll get onto this more actually in a minute, but horsepower is a product of like torque and revs, isn't it? So if you multiply torque and revs at a certain point, you'll get pretty much the horsepower, and they never get the revs to get that peak power. But this looks like it's going to rev up. They've not been particularly forthcoming with the specs because it's still a prototype, but it still looks pretty punchy. The other thing is weight. Like all the cruisers are 300 kilos plus, apart from the Diablo, which is like 220, 230 or something. This is like a prototype. So like, look at that exhaust. That's not going to fly, is it, with, you know, Euro 5?
No.
So once you put a cat on it and stuff like that, or whatever, you know, the homologation necessities, it's going to weigh a little bit more, but still 204 kilograms. They don't say whether that's dry or wet, but 204 kilos.
That's insane for a cruiser of that size.
It is. I mean, you've got to look at it and say there's not much to it, is there? Like they've really gone bare bones with the sort of finish and...
Yeah, granted, definitely, but impressive.
Still that impressive.
Definitely, impressive figures.
Let me give you some other impressive, this is more like the hardware. So the other thing, the other side of it is that they've tried to make it handle. So you can see the pegs are quite high on it. So they've got decent ground clearance. They've got 17-inch wheels front and rear.
Yeah.
So they tried to make it a bit more, it does kind of maybe... detract from the looks a little bit to me.
Yeah, I was going to say a bigger wheel on the front would have been, I get it, for handling you want the 17s, but it's not traditionally goes with that look, does it?
No, would you say as well that rear wheel looks a bit little in that quite large rear mudguard?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to comment on somebody's design aesthetic, but I don't think I'd have paired that rear section with the rest of the bike. Some of it looks a little bit cobbled together.
It is a prototype, we've got to say. But yeah, I know what you're saying. It does look like a prototype. I wonder if a little bit of that, though, is like for rear wheel travel, because it's got a proper swing arm and monoshock, like a horizontal mounted monoshock, a la Kawasaki or whatever. That's going to make it ride better.
Of course, and you want more travel on the rear, which obviously you wouldn't normally have on a cruiser as much.
Oh, mate, honestly, cruisers are some, like, what is it, the Indian Scout?
Yeah.
Normally you get like, what, let's say 120 mil of travel minimum up to, I don't know, what would you say, like 150 is all right, and then adventure bikes go above that. Yeah, the Indian Scout, for example, this is the same with the Sportster S, Harley Sportster S. Indian Scout 76 millimeters, Sportster S specs. Let's have a quick look at this. No, it doesn't say on the spec sheet. That's another example of a manufacturer being a little bit shy. But honestly, going over some serious bumps on those style of bikes. So while I am complaining about that sort of big gap between the rear wheel and the sort of top of the rear mudguard there, like, I probably would really appreciate it when all my weight's on that.
Yeah, you can't. It's a tough one, isn't it? If you're talking about having a performance cruiser, then unfortunately you are going to sacrifice a little bit of the looks, but then that makes it more functional and less posery, I suppose, but still something you can definitely pose.
This is, you know, every motorcycle is a trade-off, mate. There's no... Yeah,
definitely.
Like, often in the comments, people will be like, this bike would be better if it had this. And it's like, yeah, but there's a trade-off. It would it'd be, you know, less good-looking, or it'd be more expensive, or it'd be heavier, or, you know, all those kinds of things. And this is definitely compromised looks-wise, but it's definitely leaned into the performance. The other thing with the wheels is, like, the front and rear wheels don't quite match, do they? But again, it's prototype.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does that look good?
I think, is that maybe also, the other thing I've spotted on there, which instantly, if I saw it, would go, even if it didn't have the Buell name on it, I'd be like, huh, I wonder what the base is for this, because it's got that big front disc on it as well.
Yeah, mounted to the sort of rim.
Yeah, iconic with the with Buells.
It's a single disc, but yeah, that is an absolute beast. And and the sort of diameter, of course, of a disc can give it more leverage, I suppose, and therefore more power. It does look so cool as well. That is one of my favorite design features of Buells. And I think the caliper on it, it's got a lot of parts, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say six. I think it's six, but
I think it's six.
I could be making that up.
But it might be more. You never know. One, two, three. Yeah, I think it's six, but it could be more than that. Might be eight. Because look, I can see four holes on it.
Four holes on one side, yeah. So I was thinking maybe eight. But I remember hearing something about them having six on the old.
Okay.
Either way, that's some good stuff.
That's a lot of putts.
I really like the look of that, because no one else does that. So it really does call something out as being from Buell.
Lighter as well, I'd assume, because there's no sort of carrier for the disc.
I like it. I mean, they were always innovative. I don't know how familiar you are with Buell, but my dad absolutely loves them. So I've heard, you know, about how they started and some of the stuff that made them a bit more interesting, like having the oil in the frame and stuff like that, which gave it sort of better balance, I think it was.
Yeah, one of the bikes has fuel in the frame and oil in the swing arm or something. Madness.
Maybe that was what it was. Yeah, but it's like in the other parts of the bike, we're like, oh yeah, it's just wasted space, I guess, on other bikes.
I'd like if it was full of liquid refreshment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then you'd have to keep topping it up, and it'd probably taste a bit manky.
It'd get warm, so it'd have to be coffee or...
Mulled wine. No.
Mulled wine.
Just mulled apple juice.
Anyway, let's move on. It's got Dunlop tires, super sticky looking, upside down fork. You know, it's got that horizontal backlink shock.
Yeah.
The Buell style brakes were mentioned. SC Project exhaust as well. That looks like it's going to be very noisy. Yeah. I don't know if you've picked up on this, but it's also got a gold chain, which, as we all know, I have to say it every time, is worth another 10 to 15 horsepower.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Now, leave a quiet bit for someone to say, what is he talking about? Do you remember I told you about this? I said that in one of my YouTube videos once, and like, it's just a joke. It's not a very good one, but someone commented saying, I don't really understand why a gold chain adds 10 horsepower.
Oh.
It's just like people say that, don't they? Like, oh, red cars are faster or whatever.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's just he didn't read the sarcasm.
I'm going to try and deliver stuff like that as earnestly as possible. Do you know what I mean? To try and throw people off.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep doing it. Anyway, The only downside of this bike... Wait, is this the only downside? It looks kind of unusual, I suppose. But performance-wise, it sounds like it'll be incredible. It'd be certainly an experience to ride. But
yeah,
one of the downsides of this bike, and possibly an upside, is that they haven't announced the price. And I assume it's going to be astronomical, let's say.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll probably put it in the bracket with the other bike that's allegedly a performance cruiser, which would be the Arch lineup. One of their bikes.
Oh, yeah, we've got to talk about those. We mentioned them in a recent podcast, right?
We did, yeah. It was one of my picks for, just if we were choosing, dream bikes.
A dream cruiser.
Yeah. And it's, what's that, like 70,000 or something like that?
Is it?
So I think it was. It was high. If it's not, it's, not far off. If you think of like high-end bikes from most manufacturers or from main manufacturers, well, they're going up to like 25-ish if you go really top spec. So, minimum 40 upwards, I'd say, for something like that, surely.
You'd expect so, but I do have some pleasant and positive news for you.
Go on.
In order to secure one, you only need a deposit of $50. And, double good news, it's refundable.
Screw it. I'll put my £50 in for that.
At what point does a deposit become so insignificant that it's meaningless? And like, let's say Buell, it's $50 and it's refundable. Like, let's say they get 1,000 orders for these, like, let's say they're $100,000, these crazy super cruisers. And they make, what did I say? How many orders did I say? Let's say 100 people. 100 people put $50 deposit on £100,000 bikes. So they're expecting to sell like 10 million, is that right? Mm. And then everyone just says, actually, I'm good, I'll take mine.
Yeah, or I only thought it was going to be like 15.
No, I don't think that'll happen. I think maybe it's $50 to sort of register your interest now. Maybe they'll have a little word and say, look, we're going to actually build it now. Are you still in? And then you have to confirm it. But still.
Yeah, it's an odd one though, because depending on what they eventually then come up with as a price, you could you're going to lose a lot of those $50.
Shall we set up a GoFundMe on the Full Tank Motorcycle podcast group where we all put $1 in each and then put a deposit?
We can all share this, timeshare.
I mean, the problem is you have to then pay for it, but just to have the deposit on would be excellent. Just be a real moment in my life. Anyway, that is the Buell Super Cruiser. What do you think of that? First impressions. You don't have to say which one you're going to choose yet, because we're going to go through the rest of the bikes, so you can tell me at the end, but... First impressions of that one?
I like it.
Is it your cup of tea?
Is it my cup of tea? Probably not. It wouldn't be the one I would personally buy, because it doesn't look like my kind of bike. Because like I say, if you're going to get a cruiser, just get a cruiser. If I'm going to get a bike that performs, I don't mind how that looks. There's loads of well-performing bikes that don't look like cruisers.
It's a Swiss Army knife though, mate.
But what I would say is I am... that was a nice name to see pop up today when you're saying there's a few odd, quirky bikes that you're showing me.
Have you seen the adventure bike they announced? I've got to show you this. Hang on. Yeah, they are putting out some other new bikes at the moment. The Super Cruiser looks kind of interesting. This is called the Super Touring. That is probably one of the most confusing looking bikes.
I don't know what I make of that.
the metal hard cases that are sort of body matched, and then the front headlights. I don't know. I'm sure it's wild to ride, but crikey.
That's the thing, is they were always really good. And then I think it's the XB9 and XB12s, the ones where the naked looking ones back in the day. Not that
they were quite cool, weren't they?
But they're really cool looking. And that is a bike I would consider having. And they're tiny as well, actually, when you see them up close. So super agile. But then they also had the Lightning? Whatever they're called, the other ones. And they weren't lookers, in my opinion. So they have a history of kind of like a mixed bag of like some that are very pretty and quirky looking, and some that just like pig ugly, but oh, bless it. It's endearing in some way, but they also perform. And it really is the performance at the end of the day, isn't it? It doesn't matter what it looks like when you sat on it.
I'd still say it's a ballsy move to put those aluminium adventure bike cases. Just get some like more rounded, givey black cases, yeah. Generic, stick those on. But I have noticed here, mate, it does have those wheels that they've put on the Super Cruiser. So maybe those are a standard feature that sort of aren't quite matching. Anyway, you said not your direct cup of tea, but you appreciate the sort of ingenuity and engineering ambition.
Yeah, I like seeing something new. I like seeing people try different things.
That's the great thing about you, Tim. You're very open-minded. Right, next bike is the Kawasaki ZX4RR. I have covered this on the main channel, but I still thought it's worth a little chat on the podcast just to see what you think about it. Have you clicked on the link?
I have. Give me some quick specs on this. Give me up speed.
So this is a 400-ish cc inline four. So it sort of revs up to 15,000 RPM. They originally announced the ZX25R. So 250 inline four, but that was only to be sold in like Indonesia or something.
I remember that. Yeah. Because I was saying that I used to have a 250 four cylinder and I loved it because it was kind of, again, it's kind of silly. It's a little bit unnecessary, but it was brilliant.
And also, you know, these bikes are so well received on YouTube, I think, because they do remind people of those sort of small inline fours from the 90s and stuff that you used to race round on and you'd be like full throttle everywhere you go and they'd rev up and make a, you know, a heck of a noise.
Yeah.
This 400 version looks to be the sort of global iteration, I suppose, of that 25R or 25RR. Mm-hmm. So I think there might be two levels of spec. And it should, I think it revs like red lines rather at around 15,000 RPM.
Brilliant. And it will sound fantastic.
Yeah. There's some clips, actually. I'd recommend going off and finding those on YouTube, on the Kawasaki YouTube channel. But also think of the 25RR. On the Kawasaki Indonesia YouTube channel, there's a couple of different clips where they've taken it on track and fully nailed it, but also fitted it with like a race system. And it does sound like phenomenal. And there's not many bikes that are going to sound like that on the market. No. I think when you look at a 400 little sports bike, you may be thinking of like Ninja 400 replacement, but this is a completely different thing. This is not like a beginner entry-level sports bike. This is more of like it's like an acquired taste sort of track bike kind of thing, isn't it? It's for someone who wants that particular genre of more lively, revvy bike, and they want something lightweight perhaps to do, like I say, track days and that sort of thing on. So they haven't given any power figures, but this is what I was talking about when we were in the previous bike about how, you know, horsepower is a product of torque and revs basically. And they said do 26 pound feet of torque at 11,000 RPM, so that's about 35 newton meters. So if it redlines at 15,000 RPM, assuming it carries some, I mean, if it carried all of that torque all the way up to 15,000 RPM, that'd give it 75 horsepower peak, but it'll probably tail off that torque a bit. So it's probably about 70 or 65, which I think sounds pretty phenomenal because you're thinking of a 400 being like a small beginner bike, but really this is a competitor for like the R7 and the Aprilia 660, you know, the RS 660, because they make, well, the R7 makes 72 horsepower. The Aprilia makes a bit more, but still, this is like playing in that sort of middleweight, slightly more advanced, possible to do track days kind of sports bikes, but just with like a completely different flavor of engine. What was the inline four that you had then that was a 250?
Yeah, 250. It was a Kawasaki, Kawasaki ZR250. They had a ZZR250, I think, for European market, but this one they only sold in Australia, I think, in that kind of region. And it was otherwise known as a Balias as well, but it was like a little bit like a Suzuki Bandit looking thing. So a naked
ZR250.
ZR250, yeah. Or just type in Balias, but you'll be able to find
What does Balias mean?
I have no idea. Had a little horse on the side though, so maybe it was compared with the maybe that was a horse. It was also, it was originally red and it sort of looked a little bit more pink, and the horse could also look like a pony, so it was
it sounds like bilious, which is not a pleasant
not a nice word. But yeah, so it was, I believe it was called the ZR250, but you can find clips of them online, and it was one of those that I just saw pop up as a really random bike. Really random choice. It was after mine got stolen as well, and it was only £600. I was like, screw it, just to get around town I'll get one of them, and it looks quite nice. And it was great fun because it sounded like a GP bike, because it would rev it would go, I think it was past 15,000, but it would rev high. So yeah, you could really scream it off.
So you were going everywhere in first gear, basically, to try and impress people.
Basically, yeah, with the little like thimble pistons firing up and down. But it was good fun.
That's like, what is that in CC? That's like 62.5 per cylinder. Wait, is a CC the same as a sort of a milliliter? Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Mm. So that's like a shot glass. That's like four large shot glasses. Granted, 60 mils, that's a big measure, but that is tiny, isn't it? It's almost like toy-like.
Yeah, fully. It was, it was a great little thing. I mean, it wasn't a keeper, unfortunately.
For what reason? Are any of your bikes ever keepers, mate?
No. No, so it was too small. I know, I obviously, to do any kind of a trip on it, it was only good for town stuff, because if I was going any long distance stuff, that was just too much. But yeah,
that looks cool,
I kind of wish I'd kept that, because it was super cheap and I could have done something quite fun with it as a little custom job.
40 horsepower, it says, according to motorcyclespecs.co.za.
Sounds about right. But then, like we say, it was because you could rev the tits off the thing.
14,000 RPM, it makes its peak power. Yeah. Mm. Sounds very similar to this. Mm. Maybe the new ZX25R is a bilious with a new fairing on it. This is the Kawasaki bilious. Yeah.
Yeah. Kawasaki. Yeah. Bilious.
Anyway, we're talking about the ZX4RR. So, like I say, not a learner bike. 60, 70 horsepower, I'm estimating.
I would say 60, yeah. I'm basing that off. So, for me, I am all in on this. I like the sounds of this because, as I've mentioned previously, right, it's really good fun having a little sports bike, something that you feel you can really grab a hold of and get pretty much everything out of the bike, you know? And this probably actually, this would be faster than the thing. I was thinking it was a 300 I was on from CF Moto. So this will undoubtedly be a little bit quicker as well. And probably has some decent spec'd gear. Or Kawasaki sort of play it safe with that, but they balance it really well. Like everything sort of feels appropriate for the size and everything like that.
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to get like, I know what you're saying, you're never going to get it dripping in like fancier stuff, but it does have some good gear if you want to hit a lowdown.
You wouldn't
on that,
need so. It, would you? Because if you ended up, if you put, you know, if the brakes were too good, you end up unsettling the bike a little bit, sort of settling into a corner and stuff. Or if the suspension's too stiff for a light bike, then that's kind of pointless as well. So there's no point in sticking Brembo stylemmas on the thing.
For the ZX25R, I think they did offer a track kit or something. So if you did want to go that route. But yeah, it does have upside down fork, which a lot of the bikes that are more beginner focused don't have. The riding position looks a bit more aggressive as well. Mm. They've got their horizontal backlink shock design as well. But also, it gets quite a few bits of tech. So, three riding modes, sport, road, rain. Wow. Two levels of power from the throttle. Three levels of TC, I think, and off. TFT dash, phone connectivity. Twin discs as well up front. It's got the works.
That is up-spec'd in terms of electronics for a little 400. That's cool. I like that. But yeah, it sort of sets me in mind of the old sort of CBR 400s. There was a whole wave of them in the 90s, wasn't it? Where they had a load of little sports bikes that can be a weapon in the right hands. Honestly, if you get behind someone on a VFR 400, you know, they will, if it's the right kind of rider on a track, they'll be doing well.
For me, it kind of, this one, the enjoyment of it, I think hinges a little bit on the gearing. Because if it revs up to 15,000 RPM, if I'm unable to access that, like basically in second gear, you want to be able to have it sort of at between, let's say, 11 and 14, don't you?
Yeah.
At road speeds. If that's well above road speeds, then it's really not going to make for that much fun of a road bike. And it might be more track biased. And that's the only risk for me with it being so revvy is like, even with the CB650R, I felt a little bit like this isn't as fun as an MTO7 because the party's in the mid-range with the MTO7. And same with the Hornet, the party's in the mid-range as well there.
Yeah.
Whereas the party's right, you know, it's on the upper floors with the CB650R. And if that's the same here, it could be even more the case because there's less capacity.
Could be.
Then it might be a bit like, great idea, but actually in practice, is it a little bit... Because it's blatantly going to feel flat as F, isn't it, in the mid-range? to keep it family friendly.
I mean, hopefully they've given it some shorter gears then, shorter gearing. Because they, I mean, like something on the Z900, they've got relatively sort of short gears on that to make it punchy. And then I think an overdrive in the sixth gear. So there's ways of doing it. And I'm sure Kawasaki's across that. So I'm sure it'll be good fun.
I don't know, mate. I actually think my 5 minutes of thinking about it may be equal to, if not better than, Kawasaki's whole R&D team.
Possibly.
Yeah. And therein lies the problem with motorcycle YouTube channels / podcasts. Anyway, don't think about it too much, because then you'll get existential and then we won't be able to make podcasts. So the only big sticking point again is going to be the price. Like, it's got to be competitive, you know. The RS660 is such a fun bike, brilliant, and you can get those for nine to ten grand new, because the dealer's always discounting them. And I tried one at Superbike Factory the other day for like 200 miles on it, 300 miles on it, and that was like eight and a half grand. You didn't get Kawasaki reliability, but that's sort of giving you some idea. The R7, what's that at the moment? I think that's about $9,000. Yeah, 8,910. So it's got to be around that $8,000 to $9,000 price point. Although it does have, I think, a really strong USP. There's no other little inline fours that'll scream like that. So maybe that's enough to push that price up a little bit, but not too much.
My guess is, I mean, they're going to have to come in lower than the R7 or the 660 for me.
Punchy,
to
mate.
Sell them, I think. Because otherwise, because a lot of people are wowed by the size of it and the horsepower, the figures, you know. So I think when they look at a 400, they don't want to be spending the same sort of money. As silly as it might be, you know, they don't want to spend the same sort of money. Depending what's on it, you know.
Yes. All right. Well, let's keep an eye on that one. One to try and get as a little test on as well, I think.
Yeah.
And then, we'll deliver the verdict. But price and gearing are my big questions there. Next one, Bird. Now, what is the... I'm not old enough to remember now for something completely different. What's that catchphrase from?
Yeah, I know the catchphrase, but I can't think.
Oh, it's from Monty Python, isn't it?
I think so.
I knew that. Yeah. Anyway, now, but genuinely now for something completely different. Next bike, the Indian Challenger RR. Have you got it open?
Yeah, now we're talking. Look at that. Look at the size on that. What's going on?
It's not something that you would say has the sort of aesthetic proportions right, is it?
It's not. It's that is a hot mess. That is, it's sitting on a track on a paddock stand. So there's not even a side stand. That's a race bike. But it's got panniers and then it's got stickers and sponsors on it. So it's clearly a race bike.
Someone's into it. Someone's thought, I want my brand on that. Yeah, but it's quite a lot of sponsors there.
Who are they? S&S is definitely on there because they've got the exhaust. Mission is on there somewhere.
You know Mission or not?
I don't know any of these.
Mission make tortillas, don't they?
Do they? Oh, that does look, that does look like a food chain.
They make tortilla wraps.
Cool.
And some other stuff, I guess. So that's probably what's in the side cases there, because they've got two Mission stickers. Just loads of tortillas.
Just your lunch in there as well,
It's endurance racing. You've got to keep the carbs up.
This is a delivery bike for them. This is what delivery is going around on.
If your delivery showed up on this Indian Challenger RR, God, I'd love that. In fact, I told you about that the other day, didn't I? That once, a while back, I saw in the news that there was a guy who was doing delivery, but he bought the full Team Sky cycling kit and he bought the race bike that they use and he was just cycling around in full Team Sky gear delivery and takeaways. They'd be similar here, full leathers, just go. Yeah. Anyway, I've got to explain a little bit about this, mate, because it's a product of the King of the Baggers race series. Do you know about this?
I'm not familiar, but yes, now it all makes sense. Look at the...
It's like a support race in some of the American racing series. And it started as a bit of a laugh. Like, you had to take a bagger, you know, that style of Indian or Harley where you've got the two bags
big
at the back.
Fairing on the front as well. You've got the panniers. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It's got a little bit out of control. Like, they've got some serious riders doing it. And it looks bonkers. Have a look on YouTube when you get a chance, mate. But like, these bikes do look quite daft, being absolutely spanked around a track. And I don't quite understand it, but it has got to the point where I think it was like a one-off race for a laugh, like three, four years ago.
Makes sense.
Now it's like they're producing these like special editions celebrate it.
I can see how that, I can see how it sort of spirals out of control. The Bike Shed did one where they did the commuter cup and it was all like GSs. The brief was that you had to have either a top box or panniers, but yeah, mainly top box.
But this is, I think, fully supporting, like, in the same way the F900R cup is the support race for the kind of like British superbikes this year. So there's one at every round. I think this is the same for, I don't know what series is in America, but like it's like a full series now, which is crazy. A bit about the bike though, before you make your mind up on whether you think this is your pick of the bunch this week. So this is the...
Imagine it was. I'm just going to tell you now, yeah, this is going to be my favorite of all of them.
Well, it could be. You never know once you hear the lowdown. So clearly it's based on the Challenger, which is the bagger, let's say. And that gets their... It's quite performance orientated for an Indian anyway. So it gets their Power Plus engine, which is the liquid cooled V twin. A lot of their other bikes use Thunderstroke V twins, which are big air cooled pushrod kind of traditional torquey engines. The Power Plus was built to rev up a bit more and make it feel more modern, more lively. And so they've taken that engine and bored it out. So now it's 112 cubic inches, which I think will be about 1.7 liters. Let me check. Yeah, 1.835 liters. It's a big beast. So we just gone from a bike that was 62 cc's, well, 62 and a half cc's per cylinder on the ZX4RR to a bike that is nearly 920. So each one's like a big liter bottle of Coke. Going boom, 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 boom. The standard bike makes 112 PS at 5,500 RPM. So not bad, 120 horsepower and 178 newton meters of peak torque. And that's without it being bored out. And they've given it the sort of race air filter, race exhaust system. S&S have got involved and done all the tuning, I believe, and all that kind of thing. So the engine should have a little more punch. They've obviously got rid of the belt drive and given it a chain drive. Does it have a gold chain?
Hard to tell on that, like, maybe. Let's say yes. I mean, it doesn't need that extra bit of horsepower. It's doing pretty well by itself. I can the swing arm looks pretty beefy because they've obviously jacked the
to acknowledge that the gold chain adds 10 horsepower and then just move on with
it. I mean, are they struggling for horsepower at this stage?
Well, more just, I'm thinking if anyone drops into the podcast at this point.
It's true.
We'll try and catch them out with that. No, it doesn't need more horsepower, but obviously that gold chain delivers 10 more, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, mate. Cheers. It's got a more racy geometry, they say, so they've tweaked it up a bit. I mean, look at the, on the pic you're looking at, it's got Olin's forks, right? It's got an Olin shock, which you don't get on the Challenger, of course. But look at the, can you see the top yoke? It sort of droops down. That must be custom made.
Yeah.
What do you think is going on here, mate?
That's quite cool. I also, my eyes are drawn also to the crotch cushion, which tells me the braking power must be pretty good.
Crotch cushion and a butt cushion. So it must be quite fast as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's got the little step in the rear to keep you in your seat, which I can imagine that is necessary on this bike. It would just yank you off the back. So yeah, no.
In order to qualify for King of the Baggers, obviously the bike has to have the cases and they have to be of a certain dimension. That's in the rules. So you have to fit a certain size of box in, let's say. Okay.
They look like a skin though, because even on the bottom, I'm kind of like, I'm peering over the other side. It looks like it's hollow. It's not on the other side.
I think they test them, but they are carbon fiber. They've made carbon fiber versions of their sort of side cases to make them lightweight. They've put a little aero tail section there. The rear mudguard is fiberglass to hold them in place, give it that strength it needs, but still be fairly lightweight. It's not metal, of course. That'll be too heavy. But the thing is, mate, the reason I was sort of looking at that top clamp there, which it looks like a mustache, I think that's part of what they've done to jack this bike up, because a big problem with baggers is that they have terrible ground clearance. So to make these bikes more competitive and faster, they've made the bags high up, but also this thing is jacked up to F. And I mean that, mate. It is tall to the point where I was heard someone who was like talking about riding one, and they said that it was really difficult to get on it because it didn't have the side stand. So you got to take it off the paddock stand and then try and get a leg over it. And it's massively tall. So want to take a stab?
Oh, the height. Go on then. If for it to be tall, I'm going to say 850 upwards, probably with the width on that thing.
Well, they didn't give me the exact figures. They just said that it was like this amount more than the standard bike. So I've added, you know, what I think it is. But
yeah,
I think 887 mil in the seat, but it may be a little bit more than that because of the suspension jacked up.
Because that's getting on to, like, we were talking about the Husky Norden the other day, the newer, more adventurous.
Yeah, the Norden Expedition.
Yeah, and the height on that is like, it's monstrous. Yeah.
It's like an adventure. It's like a dirt bike, but it weighs quite a lot. It probably twice of what a dirt bike weighs because the standard Chieftain. Do you want to do another guess? Sorry, Challenger, the standard Challenger. What do you think it weighs in kilos? Bearing in mind, we were just talking about the Buell Supercruiser. That's 204.
With all the extra, okay. It's got the...
Just the bagger version. It doesn't have the top box, but yeah.
Okay. North of 300 kilograms.
377 kgs. And the Pursuit, which is the full cruiser version, the full tourer version, sorry, with the big top box, and it's got all the speakers in it and stuff, and it's got the lower leg guards. That's well over 400 kilos. I borrowed one last year, and it was just like, you just double check every time you do a low speed maneuver that you're actually going to be able to do it. So yeah, the standard bike is normally 377 kgs. This one though, 297. So they've managed to shave a whole heavy person off it. An 80 kg person. But still, it's a bit of a beast, isn't it, that?
With the height on it as well, that's ridiculous.
A 300 kilo bike that's nearly 900 mil in the seat height. Yeah. Sounds like my worst nightmare. And I say this as someone who went to a track day with Pirelli last year. Kawasaki loaned me a Z900 that had been race prepped. Mm. I took it off the center stand and then I tried to swing a leg over it, but my leathers were quite tight. Because I always order too small. And I just ended up in the pits on my side, just with this beautiful race prep Kawasaki Z900 on me. So if I can't even get on one of those, then what chance do I have of this behemoth?
Yeah, and that's a lot more to land on you as well. Nice.
It is. I think I'd be just pinned under it, waiting for someone to pick me up. Be like, quick, my session's starting. Anyway, they've done that by sort of removing stuff. So it does have the windscreen, but there's like, it's got a sticker for the headlight, and obviously doesn't have any lights front and rear and doesn't have a license plate. But they've given it the sticker that looks like the Challenger headlight so that it looks, you know, recognizable. I suppose there's got to be some brand value to Indian for doing this. But unlike the other ones that we talked about today, where I said we don't yet have a price, this one, the price has been announced. I'm sorry, it's going to be another finger in the air guessing game for you because there are 29 going to be available in 2023. I don't know why 29. Normally, like if it's a special edition like Triumph, if it's the Street Triple and it's a 765 cc engine, they make 765 of them. This they've made 29.
Okay,
don't get it, mate.
Well, it says 29 on the side of it, so
29 of them. Yeah, but did they put the number on the side to show how many they're making?
Maybe, or maybe it's their number in the race series.
A good podcaster would have researched that, mate. But yes, there's 29 available.
Hmm.
Anyway, guess the price.
I mean, exactly as it comes, like this. They're just doing it.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you buy it as a race bike, I think.
All right, nice. God knows. Let's go with $50,000.
Basically, you got to double it. It's $92,229, which then I'm thinking there's got to be some significance to the 29 because that's 92229.
Yes.
Must be their number or whatever. Anyway, 29 bikes doesn't sound like very many, but if you charge in $92,000, that's nearly $3 million. Well, it's $2.67 million in revenue just off selling 29 bikes, which is pretty phenomenal.
That's all you need.
Yeah, pretty special. So, you know, factor in the price, consider the price, but just first impressions of that one. How does that sit with you? Is that your, let's say this segment should be Tim's cup of tea. Is this one your cup of tea?
This one, this it should be called Tim's cup of tea.
Okay,
I'm gonna say, this is my cup of tea. I'm gonna say, I can't even think of a funny response. I'm just gonna go with a blunt no. This is not my cup of tea. Same as you, mate. It sounds like an absolute nightmare. A bike that cost me $90-something thousand that weighs sort of near 300 kilograms and is that tall, sounds like a party I don't want to be invited to.
It's one of those situations where you say, for that money, I could buy all of my dream bikes.
Yeah, and I could get on the thing and I could comfortably maneuver it around as well.
I do like something about it though. Not necessarily this bike. I think it's funny that they've done it and like it's mad expensive and it's definitely got people talking about it. I've seen this posted quite a few places. But what I do like is the fact that King of the Baggers is able to thrive and people are not taking all the racing too seriously, you know?
Yeah.
I like that idea. Especially now that we've got the sort of spoilers and aero stuff. And, you know, like Yamaha, was it, that showed a rear spoiler on their MotoGP bike, as well as like everyone having winglets and stuff. Like they just feel like they're becoming less and less relatable, those bikes, you know, the MotoGP stuff. It is still phenomenal. The tech, the racing, the riding, everything about it, you know, phenomenal. But to just have a bit of a wacky race thing that's grown in popularity, much like you said with the Cafe Racer Cup that the bike shed used to organize and having that commute around, just a bit of fun in people's lives.
Yeah.
Especially in these challenging times, mate, is a good thing. So that's a positive message. The next bike is the Triumph T120 Black DGR Limited Edition.
Yeah, now this one I saw pop up.
So look, if you scroll down, I sent you the link, but if you keep going down to the bottom of that page-ish, there's a little gallery, perhaps, where you can click through and see a little bit more detail. But this is a special edition of the Triumph T120 Black, done to celebrate their partnership with the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, which is a worldwide sort of annual event now, a huge organization. Mm-hmm. And the ride is coming up in, I think it's in May this year. So basically, you get dressed up in your tweed and sort of dapper jackets and all that kind of thing. Dress up like a distinguished gentleman, go out for a ride, try and generate some money for charity. And they support Movember as well. So that's where a lot of the funds go. Movember, I believe, well, that's in November. You grow a mustache. And I think that is around men's mental health and prostate cancer. So it's two birds with one stone there in terms of good causes. Triumph have sponsored it for many years, this, and been heavily involved.
Yes.
And what I really like about what they've done this year, so they did a beautiful custom, I think it was a Thruxton last year, very nice looking bike. And what they normally do is they give it away to the person who raises the most funds. So they just give them a brand new Triumph, which is very generous and cool. But this one, the T120 Black for this year, I think they're going to make 250 of them, sorry.
Okay.
So they will be available to buy, which is quite nice because then you got a bit of a, you know, double-edged thing there. One is a great prize, but also the opportunity to own one for a few people. I don't know what you think of the paint job on this one, mate.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's very tasteful. I mean, I wouldn't expect anything different, but I like the look of that one a lot. Just to describe it for anyone who's not looking, it's a white and black with gold hand-finished detailing on it.
Look good, doesn't it? It's got the DGR logo on the back of the tank there. DGR logo on the side panels, which I think if you're not really that bothered about DGR, then there's probably one to pass on, but 250, they'll almost certainly just sell out of these.
But it's also, now I have a question in terms of them making this one. Is it purely for, you know, them to sell, or are some of the sort of proceeds of that going to the charity as well?
I don't know. I think they sponsor DGR. They'll give that bike away, but I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder if they are giving any of the proceeds.
Because you would like to think, it's like when you buy, I bought a commemorative watch, for example, with a poppy on it. But it was going to military causes and charities, which you like to think that it's going to support the thing that it's obviously in the tone of, if you like.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. I'd have to check in with Triumph and find out if that's the case, but I don't know if it is. But still, I think it's quite a nice paint job. Let's say they just had it without the DGR logos in normal times. The sort of half white, half black with a gold stripe down the middle. It looks really good with the brown saddle as well. So I think it's a very nicely done bike.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, what is nice is the one that they give away is serial number 001. So the person who wins it gets like the number one limited edition of this bike. Yeah. So yeah, very cool. Is this your C of T?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it definitely is. Yeah.
Okay, so we had what? Four bikes. Let me run you back through them today. The Buell Super Cruiser, basically the cruiser format, but stripped down, made very lightweight, very aggressively spec'd. Prototype. You can put a £50 deposit, $50 deposit and get it refunded. So not much risk of commitment there. Number two was the ZX4RL, the screaming inline four from Kawasaki. Revs up to 15,000 RPM. We think it's going to be a middleweight competitor. It's quite well spec'd as well. That'll probably be like $8,000-$9,000, maybe a little more for the fancy one. Number three, Indian Challenger RR, King of the Baggers special, bored out to 1.835 liters, jacked up and still 300 kilos and cost $92,000, $229,000, which is like you could probably buy a house somewhere for that. Or the T120 DGR edition, supporting charity, very tastefully done paint job, $250,000 available, and they're giving one away, which I think is generous of them, although perhaps not quite generous enough for Tim because he wants to give away some of the proceeds as well.
No, I feel like I need to qualify that and say that it's, I guess, if they're giving it away to the person who's raised the most money, that it already is there to support. It makes sense that it's there to support the charity as well.
Well recovered. Anyway, out of the four in this edition of Tim's Cup of Tea, which would be your pick?
I think my cup of tea it won't surprise you in terms of the conversation if you're keeping up with it, but I'd be buying that Kawasaki all day long.
Whoa.
I'd buy handfuls of that Kawasaki for the price of that Challenger.
Yes, you could buy loads.
How many you could buy 10. A stableful. Yeah. I think of the ones that there's two that are sort of like curiosity breeds for me, and ones I really want to ride. And that would be the Buell and the Kawasaki for sure. Because the Buell sounds really interesting. I want to see what that feels like. I want to see how that performs. And I'm imagining that it would be a nice, you know, it's a fun bike to ride. The fact that it was like 200 kilograms for a cruiser is kind of bonkers. Decent power, you know, and obviously it will handle as well. And then you've got the Kawasaki that will just be a blast. That'll be such a fun little toy to use. And it's something that you could try and, you know, hone your skills a little bit better with as well.
I don't think I've ever seen you riding a sports bike, though. I'd love to see you in the full Kawasaki leathers. Because let's say your budget is the $92,000 to buy. Let's say, you know, the thought experiment here is like, you've got the money to buy any of these bikes. Which one you go for? Assuming you go for the little Kawasaki, you've got loads left then to buy all the accessories, including hopefully some green, bright green leathers that say Kawasaki on them. And that would be a real change of image for you.
Yeah, it'd be a real treat.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, if someone wants to Photoshop that, I'm all in. I want to see what that looks like. I'm curious. The funny thing is, I think I would be faster around the track on that Kawasaki than I would be on the Indian, despite the fact that they are, you know, worlds apart in terms of scale. The other one's terrifying. Or at least if I was on the Indian, I'd be going round and I'd be like, this is great, but it'd be like trying to land a plane. Like the real skill comes in landing that thing, considering the weight and the height and the fact that it hasn't got a side stand, I'd be underneath it.
Well, I think, you'd be fast around the track on any bike that you don't end up on the floor in the pits on. So yeah you'd be fast on any of them.
And the Bonneville, I like the it's very tastefully done, and obviously if I was buying a bike, probably that's more what I've traditionally gone towards or would probably, you know, spend my money on, because it's a more kind of usable proposition. But definitely for me it's the Kawasaki and the Buell that take my interest, and they are my cups of tea. In fact, there was only one in there that wasn't a good cup of tea for me. It was more of a tisane or a kind of like infusion, and that would be Indian.
I thought you really, when you said, and that would be my cup of tea, like you really rounded off the episode then, and I feel like that could become your catchphrase for future. So yeah, I enjoyed that. Well done, mate. In fact, let's not ruin the fact that you rounded it off perfectly there by going on. Let's just say thank you very much for listening. Next episode will be next week. We'll see you then. I think I'm going to be on the Yamaha Tracer 9 GT Plus launch, so I might do a Q&A while I'm out there, because we won't get a chance to catch up. But then me and Tim will be back the week after, I think.
Yeah. Enjoy, man.
Speak soon. Well, I'm saying that to you, Tim. Speak soon, Tim. Speak soon also to the listeners. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Bye.